often it's for, quote, emergency use.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Where the meds pick up faster, you know, which makes it sound good almost, right? Like to say, oh, well, it's just for an emergency. You're like, oh, that's good. I need that. But like, we're going to dig into why it's not necessary even in the case of an emergency. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Rachel, owner of The Natural Birth Site, certified birth doula, childbirth educator, and midwife's assistant.
And I'm Tiffany Muniz, certified birth doula, lactation counselor, and midwife assistant.
Here, you'll learn all about different aspects of pregnancy, birth, and postpartum.
Remember, none of this information should take the place of your care provider and is not medical advice.
Birth is not a medical emergency.
Thanks for listening.
All right. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Natural Birth Talk. I'm Tiffany.
And I'm Rachel.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I know usually we do episodes where we have a guest on. Mm-hmm. I thought it would be a great idea if we had a few episodes where it was just Rachel and I, and we did a little series on different interventions that you may or may not be offered at, you know, a hospital or a birthing center, or potentially even at home. Mm-hmm. So today I thought that we could start with the most common one that I see, especially in the hospital. Mm-hmm. And that would be IVs.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't think of getting an IV as an intervention. Mm-hmm. But of
especially
course,
anything, if it's just like a saline lock, right?
Right,
like,
exactly. Yeah,
like just, you can have like the IV in the arm and it can be hooked up to fluids, or sometimes you just have like the port or the saline lock, or what's another name, like a hep lock.
A hep lock, yeah.
And people don't think of that as an intervention because they just do it in the hospital.
Right. It's right. Like you said, it's something that like basically everybody gets, unless if you know that you like specifically don't need it or want it. So pretty much everyone across the board gets it. And I know that people don't realize that there are potential repercussions for getting, you know, even just a saline lock, but more specifically like IV fluids.
Yep.
So today we're just going to kind of talk about that. And we're going to talk about the history of IVs, like why somebody may or may not get them. And just kind of talk about like maybe the pros and cons of doing that.
Okay. Yeah. I'm excited for this talk. I think you had a really great idea, Tiffany, with, you know, talking about interventions and specifically talking about some interventions that, like you said, people don't realize count as an intervention.
Right. Exactly. Yeah.
So we'll do several of those over the series.
I'm guilty of that too. I mean, when I was a new mom, I had no idea. Like, I just thought you went and like you, like everyone got an IV, right?
Yeah.
And like, there was no harm in doing that. I think people will be really interested to learn about IVs.
Yeah. Well, and now we're doulas and we have clients even in the hospital who deny IVs altogether sometimes.
100%. Yeah.
Not that that's easy to do.
Right. And I mean, even if you like decline the fluids, you know, some providers will say like, well, no, you still have to have the port, the saline lock, the hep lock or whatever.
Yeah.
So obviously but you don't we're here have to tell you, right. We're here to tell you that like, you don't have to do anything. And although it may not be fun to have to, you know, tell your provider no, or tell the nurses no, you know, you just kind of have to step into that. So,
yeah. Well, and you know, what do they usually say? Oh, well, it's policy, right?
Right. Yeah.
It's policy. Yeah. Guys, just because it's policy doesn't mean your rights go out the window. You can still say no.
You can obviously still say no because you're allowed to do that. It's like a basic human right. Right. But also, you know, I think some places can even kind of like, be worse whenever you say things like that, you know?
True.
So, kind of to preface all of these next few episodes, like if they're kind of being mean about it and you still are uncomfortable with whatever the intervention is, you can also always say like, one, can I see the policy? Like, I want to see the policy with my own eyes.
Yeah.
I can almost guarantee you 100% of the time, they don't even know where the policy is. They don't know exactly what the policy says.
We definitely have a hospital in our area that, depending on who I ask, depends on what I get told policy is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's a bigger hospital too. And it's like, they have no idea what policy is over there. They just hear it from somebody, but nobody's actually read it.
Right. Exactly. Or, and if that doesn't work, you know, say that they present you with the policy, and you're still unhappy, or, you know, you don't want to do whatever the intervention is, you can always ask for a patient advocate as well. Especially if you're at a hospital, every hospital has to give you a patient advocate. And you know, a lot of times, specifically at the hospital, on your little bedside table that everyone has, there is always like a pamphlet or a leaflet that has the patient advocate's information on there. So just something to point out, something we don't really ever mention on the podcast. But
we should talk about that more.
You're right. We should. I've actually had clients like reach out to the patient advocate whenever, you know, their provider or birthing location has like threatened stuff. And it's usually very helpful because they really do. The hospital staff wants to avoid that. Like they don't want to, you know, to deal with that confrontation. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times they kind of let up after that. But it is a good resource for everybody to know about. If you're at a hospital, everyone has access to a patient advocate. So
that's good to know. All right, back on track.
You ready to get started?
Yeah, let's do IVs now.
Okay. So first, what is even an IV? So IV is short for intravenous. So essentially what happens is the most often like a nurse or a birth assistant puts an IV into your arm with this little needle. The needle comes out and a small catheter stays inside of your vein. Mm-hmm. So, and then this is usually done like in your hand or your arm during labor, which can be quite uncomfortable when you're kind of like moving around and such. But this is basically done so that fluids, nutrients, medications can be given directly into your vein if a person is unable to eat or drink or take medications.
Yeah.
So for
even often it's for quote emergency use.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Where the meds pick up faster, you know, which makes it sound good almost, right? Like to say, oh, well, it's just for an emergency. You're like, oh, that's good. I need that. Like we're going to dig into why it's not necessary even in the case of an emergency.
Yeah. Yeah. So most often during labor, women are getting them, you know, at least in my experience for antibiotics, if they have group B strep and they choose to get antibiotics or Pitocin.
Yep.
But obviously we know that lots of people in the hospital use Pitocin to have their babies.
Unfortunately.
Fluids. So the most common fluids that moms are given during labor are normal saline, which is just essentially salt water. They're just giving you sodium in fluids. Then there is lactated ringers that has sodium, chloride, potassium, calcium, and lactate. So that basically is just more electrolytes.
Yeah.
It's just more hydrating than like the normal saline by itself. Yeah.
Which isn't a bad thing if you're going to have to have the fluids.
Right.
The lactated ringers are maybe the more nutritious option.
Right. Exactly. Then there is the option for dextrose. A lot of time that dextrose is mixed in with the lactated ringers. So the dextrose is just sugar. So if you have the dextrose with the lactated ringers, then you're getting sugar, sodium, chloride, potassium, calcium, and lactate, which obviously is good if you're dehydrated. Mm-hmm. And if you're, you know, if you're unable to eat and drink on your own.
Yeah. And sometimes the dextrose will be used like if baby's heart rate is like a little lower than they prefer doing some things that they are not loving. Sometimes they'll do the dextrose to see if it helps baby's heart rate.
Yep.
You know, again, though, most of the time that's not necessary. And then I also wanted to backtrack to when you said antibiotics, though, because so far we've talked about having an IV in the hospital and you have mentioned home birth, but you can have an IV or a saline lock in a home birth also. Like a lot of home birth midwives still recommend or will offer antibiotics if you're group B strep. Mm-hmm. And so even in a home birth setting or a birth center, you know, thinking about this IV, whether you have fluids or just a saline lock, it is still something that needs to be considered. And I think a lot of people who are having a home birth or a birth center think that they don't have to think about this.
Right. Right.
But it is still an intervention that could happen. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So why do most women get IV fluids in labor, Rachel?
Not for a very good reason. So, I mean, often it's preventing dehydration during labor. You kind of talked about that. The problem here is that, like, if you're just drinking fluids, that solves your problem.
Right.
Right. You know, and Tiffany and I are big fans of labor aids.
Yep.
Not just water, but something with electrolytes, something with some nutrition in it. Mm-hmm. And so that really does, that prevents dehydration in and of itself. So to have an IV fluid just to prevent dehydration is not a particularly great option.
Right. I mean, when a person can eat or drink, then it's kind of silly to have the IV fluid.
Right.
For like a normal low risk woman who you know, isn't getting induced or has an epidural or anything like that.
Right.
But the reason why dehydration is such a big deal is we know that women who are dehydrated, that can really mess with contractions. So it can lead to a longer labor. And then it also has the potential to increase the cesarean rate too, because of that potential of having the longer labor.
Okay. So another reason we might have IV fluids during labor is to maintain blood pressure when you have an epidural.
Right.
So most people don't know the medication that is given in the epidural can cause low blood pressure, which mm-hmm. in turn can cause mom to not feel good, mom yep. to get really dizzy, but also then cause baby's heart rate to drop.
Right. So when mom's blood pressure drops, that decreases the amount of blood that's going to the uterus, therefore mm-hmm. decreases the amount of blood flow to the baby. And then baby's mm-hmm. heart rate can kind of bottom out. Not kind yep. of, it can.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I don't mean to cut you off, but you know, I do have clients who choose to get epidurals, you know, maybe that's the plan the whole time or maybe not, but before you get your epidural, you have to have 1 liter of fluid
yep.
that they give you. Mm-hmm. And that's to counteract to that. So.
Yep. And so in that case, the IV fluids can be really, really helpful.
Sure.
Because like you said, we don't want the blood pressure to get too low because mom won't feel good. And then baby's going to have those negative side effects.
Right. Exactly.
And
it's really scary when that happens. I don't know if you've ever had somebody that has happened to, but, and it can happen for a little bit after too. It's not always mm-hmm. immediately after the epidural is given. It can yep. be, I don't know exactly the time parameters, but I've had clients where it happens like 45 minutes after.
I had one that like, as soon as she was given her epidural, her baby's heart rate like plummeted and she yep. already had lower blood pressure in the first place. Mm-hmm. And they had given her the liters and given her the IV fluids. It plummeted. I mean, literally there were 8 different doctors and residents. And this is in a hospital that doesn't usually have residents in the room.
Yeah.
But 8 different like doctors and residents and staff that just like swarmed the room mm-hmm. and they started prepping this mom for a C-section because her baby's heart rate had plummeted and yeah. had been down for a period of time. Like mm-hmm. one dip or a few dips is like not usually a problem. Like that's pretty right. normal, but this had dropped for a period of time.
Yeah.
And usually the rule is like 2 minutes.
So scary.
And they started prepping her for a C-section through her IV in her arm.
Yeah,
it worked out. Like the baby's heart rate like did then come back up.
Mm-hmm.
And then she actually went on to have a VBAC and not Ooh, have to have a C-section. And
the
baby's heart rate, she had a good care provider. Okay. Like yeah. the baby's heart rate did some weird stuff and they were mm-hmm. giving her, they gave her like every yeah. med and intervention possible. Mm-hmm. to yeah. keep her on the track of having a vaginal birth. And yeah. it worked out. But and in that case, that IV was super helpful. I mean, yeah. it didn't necessarily do its job originally, but then when they were giving meds to stop contractions and counteract and whatever, mm-hmm. Then that IV became really, really helpful.
Yeah.
And anyway, yeah, but like I said, you know, to also chat that, you know, I mentioned she had a really, really good care provider and that makes yeah. a difference too.
It
you
does.
Know, like,
yep.
is some care providers, like you said, Tiffany, some of them care a lot more about IVs than others.
You're right.
And care a lot more about other things. So you just, you know, you always want to make sure you have a good care provider. So
yep,
anyway,
yep.
that got a little off topic, but
yeah, that's okay. That's okay. Another reason obviously is to prep for a cesarean. That's kind of the same reason as above, you know, they give you lots of medications through the IV, you know, pain medications, antibiotics, fluids, pain medications. I don't know if I said that twice, but
it's fine. You repeat yeah. things. You can hear my yeah. door opening in the background. It's right. just going to yeah. be what it is in this episode.
It's all right. Whatever. I think the listeners might kind of appreciate it, you know.
Yeah. We're real people here.
Right. Exactly. With families and doors and we forget things all the time. So, but yeah, you know, when you have a cesarean, obviously there are lots of medications, lots of drugs and fluids given. And all of those are given usually through an IV. So you yep. would obviously have to have an IV for a cesarean. But we know, or yeah. Rachel and I know, that mostly IV fluids are given because of routine and because of NPO mm-hmm. policies.
Yep.
NPO essentially means nothing by mouth. Mm-hmm. And lots of hospitals have these kind of like blanket policies about mm-hmm. lots of things, but specifically about NPO.
Yeah.
Nothing by mouth.
Yeah. Which is a completely outdated policy.
Sure. So this began in the 1940s. And in the 1940s, it was very common for women to go under twilight or to be heavily mm-hmm. sedated whenever they gave birth. Mm-hmm. So, you know, inhaled medications were common. Scopolamine, which we know now isn't safe. But yeah, like twilight sleep is essentially mm-hmm. what that's called. And all of that causes sedation. So when you're sedated like that, you're usually not able to breathe on your own. So another type of doctor would have to come and kind of help them breathe. Mm-hmm. Now we kind of know that as like general anesthesia. But whenever, you know, somebody is under sedation or under general anesthesia, there is a risk for something called aspiration. Yeah. And specifically in the 1940s and well, up in the 1940s, anesthesia was much less safe than it is now. You know, yeah, now we're in,
for sure.
in 2023. So anesthesia right. is much, much safer than it was, you know, 80 years ago.
Yeah.
So aspiration is just the entry of, you know, food material or liquid into the trachea or lungs. And this is an issue because, you know, it can cause infection or breathing mm-hmm. problems.
Yeah.
Which obviously isn't great.
Yeah. Or with, thanks, babe. I'm not even going to edit that out. Or with someone who is sedated, like, you know, it can cause choking because they can't like cough it back up.
Right. Exactly.
They're sedated, you know, or they yeah. can't move into a position that they can force that back up.
Exactly. Yep.
So that was the reasoning back then.
Right. Right.
Right.
Now, the reasoning I think is completely different.
Yeah, because the risk of aspiration is incredibly low.
Zero.
And even if someone, it's basically zero. Yeah. And even if someone mm-hmm. did aspirate, like you literally have an anesthesiologist by your head. Because this is really in the case of like a C-section where you would have to go. It's
like
such an emergency
C-section.
That you
yeah.
have to go under general. They don't even have time to yeah. Give you regular stuff. And so that's super duper rare in the first place. And then mm-hmm. And then to aspirate during that is so rare. And then mm-hmm. even if you did, there is an anesthesiologist that stands by your head the entire time.
Literally,
and watches
they don't leave. Yeah, they don't leave. Right.
They don't
the
leave.
Entire time. Yeah.
So they're watching for it. So yeah. this idea that eating during labor can lead to aspiration and death is it's just ridiculous at this point.
It's outdated. Yeah.
yeah.
I mean, it's outdated. There is research out there that shows that like this really shouldn't be a concern.
Right.
But like, you know, most things in the birth world, it takes forever for those policies to kind of or
right.
for those studies to become policy and reality.
Right.
I mean, we see that time and time again, and we'll talk yep. about that lots of times in these upcoming episodes as well.
Yep.
So yeah.
And even if they know it's outdated, it's still like fear-based.
It is very
like there's just this fear and this like for some people, some providers and some hospitals, I won't do a blanket statement and say it's all of them, but for some of yeah. them, it's a control thing. Hey everyone, Rachel Manns here. And today I have something I'm thrilled to share with you guys. Imagine having a treasure trove of informative, entertaining, and empowering video content about the journey to parenthood right at your fingertips. That's exactly what you get with Informed Pregnancy Plus. For less than 25 cents a day, that's a quarter, guys, you'll gain access to a vast subscription library filled with documentary films, web series, mind and body fitness programs, workshops, and courses covering fertility to parenting and everything in between. Designed for new and expectant parents, as well as pregnancy and birth professionals, Informed Pregnancy Plus is like having a trusted BFF and doctor in one, guiding you through every step of the path to and through parenthood. A few of just my favorite titles are obviously The Business of Being Born, Empowered Mama, Belly Dance for Birth, How Fun Is That?, Ease into Sleep, The Afterbirth Plan, and The Core Connection, an extremely well-presented and informative workshop teaching you about your core and pelvic floor and how to keep them healthy. And here's the best part. For a limited time, you can gain full access absolutely free. Just visit informedpregnancy.tv to sign up. Sign up for Informed Pregnancy Plus right now. I'm not kidding, guys. It's really going to help you out. It's my prescription for your informed and empowered parenting journey, all from the comfort of your home. Visit informedpregnancy.tv. That's informedpregnancy.tv, and the link will be in the description below. Now back to the show.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. So yeah, I mean, really the reason why this policy is still in effect today is to just make sure that women have an empty stomach should they need an emergency surgery, kind of, you know, just like exactly what we said.
But, this but wait, is really crazy. What about like all of the emergencies that come into the emergency room that nobody thought was coming?
Right. Yeah. Who have to have emergency surgery who just ate maybe an hour before.
Yeah. And probably Burger King or like McDonald's.
I know. And also the other thing is like, why are we treating all women that they're high risk? Why are we assuming that all of these women are going to potentially have emergency surgery? Right. I mean, I could go on about that specific topic for hours, but you know, maybe if we laid off the Pitocin a little bit, like, you know, we wouldn't have to have so many emergency surgeries.
If we laid off a lot of these interventions that we're going to talk about.
Right. Okay. So again, anesthesia is much safer now, you know, 80 years later than it was in the, you know, the 40s. Aspiration rarely happens. Again, that's why like these emergency surgeries are successful and we don't really hear about aspiration because anesthesiologists, they know what they're doing. So, But the guidelines need to be updated. Policies need to be updated. The providers need to be in the know about what the current, you know, evidence and research is.
Well, and even to just stop and think about how hard a woman's body is working, which means they need a lot of energy. And where does our energy come from? It comes from food. It comes from fluids. It comes from nourishing things. And to just take that away, you know, that NPO in and of itself can cause a C-section because mom's body has nothing to work on because it has no energy. So it just stops working, right?
Yeah.
So what's it going to do?
Yeah. And some people will come back and say, well, I mean, I was allowed to have clear fluids whenever I was in labor. Okay. But like, that's not enough. I mean, think about if you were just drinking water or, you know, eating green Jell-O for 48 hours. Like, it's just not enough.
To like, I'm telling you now, guys, that green Jell-O is doing nothing for you.
Nothing. Probably spiking your blood sugar, but that's
right.
You know, the human body requires a very delicate balance of nutrients and vitamins and minerals, and Jell-O and clear water or, you know, Jell-O and water and broth isn't going to do that for you.
Well, especially the quote broth that they give you in the hospital, which is just flavored water. There's no broth, like collagen or protein in that quote broth.
Yeah. I do think it is important to consider here because we're looking at the whole picture. You know, about 75% of women in the United States receive an epidural during their labor. And we do know in some circumstances, it may increase your chance of a C-section, you know, receiving an epidural. So I do think that is something to kind of consider and take into account.
Yeah.
But either way, eating and drinking is like the most basic human right. And you're a person, you're a whole person, and you should be able to choose whether or not that, you know, you want to eat and drink when you're in labor, period.
Right. Absolutely. And I know there are some studies that are coming out that are showing that moms can eat light meals even with an epidural. Like, I'm not saying eat a steak sandwich, right? Yeah. But like some trail mix, some beef jerky, some, you know, a smoothie, you know, that can help. But even if you don't want to eat, like a labor aid, which can fall under the category of clear fluids, can make a huge difference, especially if you're putting like some collagen powder in that labor aid, which is what I always do with my clients, and a little bit of honey, you know. So if you do have to be in PO or even like only clear fluids, which you don't ever have to be, but if you choose that route, there are ways to work with that to make and to tie it back into IVs to make it less necessary to have an IV or less necessary to get all of your nutrition from an IV.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You said that perfectly.
Thanks.
there was something I was going to say and I lost it.
Oh, my perfect phrasing just made you forget yours.
No, it's okay. I can't remember. I'm sure I'll think of it. Okay. So
risks of the IV. I was just going to move on to like the risks of the IV unless there was something else you wanted to say.
No. So let's talk about the risks.
Risks with an IV. I think most of us don't even think there is a risk to an IV, but there are two major red flags, especially if you're getting fluids through that IV. But even if you just have the saline lock or the HEP lock where it's in the arm and it's ready for a quote emergency, but it's not actually being used, that in and of itself is so stinking uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I vividly remember how uncomfortable that is. And for some women who don't have, like, quote, good veins, I feel like I keep quoting things a lot in this episode. It's because half of this stuff is silly. But for women who don't have good veins, they have to get stuck multiple times in the middle of labor. They're already uncomfortable with other things. A lot of people struggle with needles, understandably so.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then just trying to get the saline lock just in case.
Mm-hmm.
That just seems like unnecessary torture to me.
Kind of ridiculous. Yeah.
And of course, if mom feels more comfortable with it, you know, the actual saline lock itself without being hooked up to anything has very, very little risk other than discomfort or pain. Mm-hmm. And then anytime you stick anything in your body, right, there's a small risk of infection.
Sure.
Yep. Right. But that's super rare with this kind of situation.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. So one of the biggest risks to receiving IV fluids during labor is fluid overload. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't think about this at all, but fluid overload, it can cause painful swelling in your body tissues during and after labor. Yep. I know a lot of you moms out there probably had IV fluids during labor and experienced swelling afterwards. You know, very common places are like your hands, your feet, your ankles, your, you know, lower legs. But it can also cause swelling in your breasts, which can make it specifically hard for breastfeeding when you're trying, you know, especially, you know, if you've never breastfed before, or really even if you've had, if you have, having swollen breast tissue plus trying to latch this brand new baby can be, you know, especially difficult.
Yeah.
But when we're thinking of terms in breastfeeding in general, you know, what can happen is depending on how much fluids you get during your labor, it can cause an artificial increase in baby's weight at the time of birth.
Yep.
So then what happens is baby actually weighs more than what they would have otherwise when they're born. And then baby over the next, you know, 24 to 48 hours pees all of that extra fluid out. So then they've lost all of that weight. And then, you know, the provider becomes concerned with how much weight that they've lost. And then of course, as mothers, you know, I think a lot of us think like, oh my gosh, it must be my fault. I'm not producing enough breast milk. I'm not doing a good enough job for my baby. So maybe you start supplementing with formula or even with your own breast milk, which, you know, pumping in those early days is really, really hard too.
Of course.
So then it just kind of starts this vicious cycle.
And then you supplement and then supplies diminished because you're anxious and you've supplemented and maybe you haven't replaced that supplementation with pumping.
Right. And then also like baby's tummy size is increased too because of the formula supplementation that they're giving. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, formula is different than breast milk.
Right.
It's just the way it is. I'm not trying to shame anybody.
Right, but it is different. And then
it is different. It's not the
feeding the baby with a bottle. Now, some people out there will use like a syringe, like get the milk or the formula in a syringe and feed baby that way, or use a spoon or a cup, which I think is an awesome option if you do have to feed in a way other than breastfeeding. But most of us just give the baby a bottle when we supplement, right?
Right.
And then that nipple flows faster than a breast. Mm-hmm. So then baby no longer wants to be patient enough to nurse at the breast because they want the fast flow nipple. And then that can derail the relationship too, just by having to supplement, you know. And not to say that supplementation is always bad, because I don't want to put that out there, but
no, right. But like, but it is something to be aware of though, when you're receiving IV fluids. I mean, that's what this episode is about, and that's what we're talking about. And it is something to consider whenever you're, you know, you're thinking about the options that you have at your birthplace. It is what it is.
Well, and also to just mention quickly too, that babies do lose weight after birth. That is completely normal, but it's when it's approaching that 7 to 10% mark that care providers start to get nervous, and babies whose moms have had IV fluids during labor, those babies are more likely to get close to that 7 to 10% mark, which is what makes
people nervous. Let's just call it what it is, right? Like most moms, a lot of moms are getting induced these days.
Of course.
So especially when we're thinking in terms of a first-time mom, some of those inductions can be 24 to 72 hours long.
So
think about how many bags of fluids they're getting.
Yeah. I mean, that's a ton.
So many fluids.
Yep.
So again, it is really, really something to heavily consider, you know, thinking about whenever you're, you know, thinking about your birth and your options. So,
And then the other obvious, like, negative side effect of having IV fluids, it's having the fluid specifically, is it restricts your mobility a little bit. You know, if you're attached to the IV fluids, then you're attached to the tubing and the pole, and then you have to drag that pole around with you everywhere you go. And then it's harder to cope, and you have to be careful not to trip. And then when the pole runs at like the little machine that's
attached to the pole,
it runs out of battery.
Beeping. Oh my gosh.
It beeps constantly. Even when it's not out of battery, it just beeps to tell you the line's occluded, which nobody ever says anything about. They're just like, no, it's fine.
It's fine.
And then it just beeped at you a ton. It's like so irritating.
Right. It's fine, but you can't bend your arm for the next 24 hours that you're here. Otherwise, the stupid alarm's going to go off. I know.
Right? No big deal.
So dumb.
And then, you know, we know that it is better to stay upright and mobile during labor, if at all possible. It's better for baby. Mm-hmm. It's better for mom. It's better to keep labor progressing.
Yep.
You know, and that just makes it really hard when you are attached to tubing in a pole.
And that goes for being attached to like any machine and any, you know, what like leads or whatever. It just makes it harder to move. You know, it makes you feel like you don't have the ability to get up and walk around or move around, or even in your bed, you know, it can be hard when you're, you know,
just moving side to side.
Right. Exactly. So, all right. So alternatives to IVs and labor. We've talked about number one.
Finish on a positive note, a
bajillion times. We've mentioned this so much. So obviously eating and drinking.
Yep.
Right. Like if you're a person, you have the ability to eat and drink. Like I said before, it's like a basic human right, regardless if you have an epidural, regardless if you have like gestational diabetes or whatever, you have the right to choose whether or not you want to eat or drink when you're in labor.
100%.
And I do just want to mention, I know Rachel has seen this too. You know, it's not like moms who are like about to hit transition are eating like full pizzas by themselves. Right.
No.
Like the further you get into labor, like your appetite naturally decreases anyway. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I do kind of want to point that out too, that like, it's not like people are eating these huge 5-course meals when they're like well in labor. When we're talking about eating, we're talking about obviously nourishing snacks and nourishing things, but most of the time, you know, it's like little bites every few contractions, or you know, like every hour we're like offering our client, you know, some type of snack, or, you know, every 30 minutes or something like that. Mm-hmm. But when we're eating and drinking, we want to focus on, you know, hydrating, really, really hydrating fluids and nourishing foods. So coconut water, herbal teas, labor aids, you know, bone broths are really great because they kind of take on
real
whatever you're adding, right?
Real broth.
Water with added electrolytes. You can buy electrolytes on their own.
Sure.
You can add, you know, Himalayan salt or, you know, Celtic sea salt or anything like that.
That's what I do in my labor aids. Like I make tea. Yeah. I put some salt, some Celtic salt or Himalayan salt or whatever. I put a honey stick in it or a squirt of honey. And then I put collagen powder in it.
So there you have protein, you have sugar, you have other vitamins and minerals from
and electrolytes.
It's essentially, I mean, it's like perfect. It's perfect to drink whenever you're in labor and even after. And for nourishing foods, things like soups and broths, but real soups and broths. I'm not talking, I mean, obviously if you only have access to like canned things, then, you know, that's better than not being, not having anything. But ideally we're wanting like those homemade broths and soups. Mm-hmm. Honey sticks, you know, that sugar is really, really great, especially at the end. Beef jerky, nuts, seeds, yogurt, you know, cheese sticks, things that are kind of just easy to like grab and take a couple bites and then, you know, be okay until the next, you know, 5 or 10 minutes or whatever.
And something we didn't mention is that, like, we kind of mentioned it, that mom's body will stop working if she's not nourished, but your uterus is a muscle.
Right.
So, and they recognize that in the hospital because they'll say your uterus is a muscle. You need carbs for muscles, but they forget that muscles also need protein.
For sure.
Your muscles have to have carbs and protein to be able to properly function.
Yeah.
And so you have to keep that in mind. If you're clear fluids, you can get carbs from that, but it's very hard to get protein from clear fluids. Unless you're having bone broth or a labor aid that has collagen powder in it.
Yep. Agree. 100%. So I don't know how you are during your births, Rachel, but I feel like I can get kind of hardcore on this, you know, every contraction.
Oh, definitely.
I'm like, here, take a sip. Okay. And then like every 30 to 60 minutes, I'm like, okay, take a bite. Take right. a bite. Take a bite.
Hey, like I don't care that you have an epidural. The nurse isn't in the room. So what do you want to eat?
Right. Exactly. Yeah. 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 So, I always say like labor is a marathon. Like you wouldn't for sure. run a 5K without like, you know, nourishing foods and hydrating fluids. So labor yeah. is the same as that. Yeah. So
absolutely. Yeah. Before we finish up.
Yeah.
We were talking about this before we started recording.
Yeah.
Hey guys, review our podcast, please.
Please
review our podcast.
We want to reach as many people as possible. We feel mm-hmm. like we put out really great content that a lot of my, like I know myself, I would have loved something like this whenever I was pregnant with my Definitely. Son. So, you know, we want to reach as many people as we can. Yeah. And really the only way to do that is for you guys, our listeners, mm-hmm. to leave ratings and reviews. Hopefully a 5-star review.
That would be great, guys. Rating.
The more that you guys do that, the higher up we are and other people will be able to see us. So we would really, really, really appreciate it.
And just to add to why you should share our podcast, you know, one of my visions when starting it is that we're getting expert information from experts out there. Yeah. I mean, there are some other birth podcasts that interview experts, but we interview just such a broad range and mm-hmm. a range of experts that aren't available in all areas for all people.
Right. Yeah.
So just like getting that info out there. So anyway, there's our little rant about please review our podcast. Also just a quick reminder that the show notes do not work on all streaming platforms. I've realized that recently. So if you want to click on a link in our show notes or our description and it's not working on the platform that you're listening on, go to thenaturalbirthtalk.buzzsprout.com. That is our podcast, our official podcast website. You can also get to that link through thenaturalbirthsite.com, also mm-hmm. through our main parent website or whatever. So,
yeah.
Okay.
Also, before we like
lots of also's this, here, hang in there, guys.
Yeah. We have some really cool things coming up for you guys. So, you know, we're really excited about that. Some really great offerings for you guys. And
yeah. And then, of course, the rest of our intervention series that we're going to be working on here. Super excited about this whole thing. So
very excited.
All right, listeners, thank you for sticking with us through all of that. If you have any questions, please email us at contact@thenaturalbirthsite.com. Any questions about anything that we talk about anytime in this series? Because when we finish up this series, I just thought of this, Tiffany. We should do a question and answer series to like we finish should. It up.
That's so funny. I was driving today and thought the same thing.
Yeah. So email us with any questions or if you have like a story or something you want to share, we can totally tie that in at the end of the series. We'll be really excited about that. So yeah, I think that's everything. We'll talk to you in the next episode.
Thanks, everyone.
Hi, Rachel Manns again. If you want to learn more, please subscribe to and rate this podcast and head over to thenaturalbirthsite.com to check out our online natural birth education course, birth story blog, YouTube channel, and more.